Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We're presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, it is NBA draft decision day for a whole lot of college basketball players. So in that vein, I've brought back the hardest working man in show business, in the basketball industry. Whatever Jimmy Patsos wants to label you as, I think that you just are that at this point. Jimmy Patsos is the guy that says,
yes.
Right?
Sniped me. Yeah, I was outside returning text messages, some personal, some business, and he was walking across the street because the way the gym is set up, because we have a grassroots event this weekend, Under Armour Association Session 1, it's like the Bermuda Triangle of the gym, Love's truck stop, and the hotel. So he was at the Love's truck stop getting like a bite to eat and comes over, takes a picture. He's like, hey, what's Sam saying? What's this guy? What's this? I'm like, all right, whatever. Post what you want. I'm like, hardest working man in show business. My friends already have a field day running with that and inserting my picture sitting on a bench with Forrest Gump and Sean McGuire from Good Will Hunting. So I'm here for it. You know, I've been told I have spit in my mouth when I talk on a podcast review. So I'm here for all the barbs. This is part comes with territory of being the bad boys of draft podcasting.
The bad boys of draft podcasting. What a world. What a world we create for ourselves in our own brains at this point, really. Well, you've had a better day than I have. I've dealt with some new home issues today. For two of the 8 days that my wife and I have lived in this new house, we have not had hot water. So that's not ideal.
Not hot water for the shower is that's a bad hit to start. I guess the cold water really refresh you and get you going to start the day, but it's not warming you up internally, I guess.
Well, like, here's the thing. So it's cold over here in Melbourne. Like, I don't know if people in America know this, but it actually does get cold in Australia at times. Everyone just assumes it's like this island utopia that like Byron Bay is, which is like the super nice place where all of the like celebrities like Zac Efron and like Chris Hemsworth live, where it's warm all year round. But like Melbourne gets cold, right? And my wife, Laura, went out 2 days ago to go for a run and then came back and there was no hot water. And she's just like standing there in sweat and like a hoodie and is like, this is the worst experience of my life.
You don't have a landlord to call. That's the beauty of renting. Everyone said, I got to buy a house, but sink breaks, hot water, it's one phone call away. Now, granted, you're one phone call away, but it's going to cost you a significant amount of money, whereas mine doesn't. So there's highs and lows, peaks and valleys of home ownership, or so I'm told.
Yeah. Yeah. We're rolling right along here. So, we have two things we want to talk about. We want to talk about name, image, and likeness rights, and we want to talk about NBA draft decision day. I would say that those are the absolute two main things that we're going to discuss here on the show. So I think that we should start with the name, image, and likeness stuff. And the reason for that is that I think it feeds into some of the decisions that we saw made over the course of the last 24, 48, 72 hours. So before we get started here, Penny, I have one very simple question. When you were a super senior doing your Mitch Martin fifth year at UMass, as a walk-on on the basketball team, what do you think your name, image, and likeness rights were worth?
$122.50. Nothing. I think we're past the statute of limitations. I didn't receive any improper benefits. I paid my way through college. I paid for a fifth year where people still question why I did that. I remember one point we got coupons to this pizza place that doesn't exist anymore that had like our faces on it. So we're like, oh man, 15% off. Like, that's great. We found out they also had the same coupons in the newspaper. But at the time we were like, oh, it's kind of like cutting edge stuff. That being said, I don't think that my appearance would be too beneficial for like a Honda dealership to have me show up there in a non-branded, because I think with the college stuff you can't use the actual school logo, so just in like a random maroon hat. I don't know how many extra people that would draw to buy potentially a used car.
Who is this 6'7" dude with spit in his mouth that is talking at me, trying to get me to buy a Honda in Boston right now?
Yeah, that's the guy that flexes at the end of the bench and never plays, right? Like, what is he doing here? Is he signing glossy 5x7 photos? Why are we paying for this? I don't think there wasn't a market really for walk-ons. Maybe for Mark Titus and Club Trail, but not for not for my club, but it is great that the floodgates have kind of sort of opened and not been the flood that people anticipated, but players can capitalize on their actual name, image, and likeness, and it hasn't really been a detriment to anything yet, too.
Well, the two things that I keep thinking about here are, I really wonder if we start seeing, like, end of the bench, like, walk-ons just do some wild shit this year at the end of the bench just to get noticed, to try and get, like, a mini, like, NIL deal. Just, like, someone like, noticing you doing wild shit at the end of the bench and making, like, a couple grand based off of that.
Oh, that'd be great. And maybe in retrospect, I have a 6 year and I could capitalize on this stuff. I hope it doesn't go too far when guys are warming up in t-shirts for the local pretzel place or something like that. But if the doors are open, more power to walk-ons capitalizing on what their stance is on a team and being the energy guy. And maybe it's the bench mob sponsored by fill-in-the-blank local. But it could be anything. I mean, we've seen stuff from all over the place. And a lot of the deals seem to be more localized in like communities and college towns. Yeah. So I don't think it's going to be sponsored by Domino's or Coca-Cola. It'll be more like a market or maybe like a moving company. Like UMass has 5 college movers that sign somebody, and I have no idea what the dollar amount is tied to it, but when you're in college, like that pays for some pizza, that pays for some beer, so I don't think anyone's turning it down either.
Yeah, I will just note, any athletes listening to this, for the love of God, do not sign away your rights into perpetuity. Just want to be very clear about that. Make sure that it is for a very specific and limited period of time, and any way that you can limit it, like they are the man with a van, the people who moved me into this new house, they are my moving sponsors. I cannot sponsor get another here. Moving
yeah,
company.
Can't do another van with a man on it. Yeah, they've cornered that.
They've cornered my rights there. The other just kind of interesting thing about all of this is, how do we think this impacts the highest level? Because, I mean, like you and I, like, have heard, like, some wild numbers thrown around. Like, for instance, like, well, I'm not going to say, like, you know, there's a quarterback out there that we've heard, like, a wild number about in college basketball that got, like, a crazy, I don't know if it's, like, an advance, like, what the deal
college
is.
College football,
but, yeah. Yeah, college football got, like, a wild number, basically. And, like, can't even confirm it, so, like, I don't even want to, like, say the name. It's only come from, like, one person that we know. How do we think that this is going to, like, impact the highest level of college football and college basketball? Because I feel like in college football, quarterbacks are just going to make an insane amount of money. And then in college basketball is a sport that is so individualized that I feel like there is a world where, you know, someone like a Hunter Dickinson is going to be able to make, like, a real amount of money by returning to school or by just being the face of Michigan basketball next year. You know, in E.J. Liddell's case, the face of Ohio State basketball.
And always the face, too. And that's what we were told when I was in school, is that when you guys go out at night, you're recognizable because you're tall and you don't wear helmets. So hockey was big at UMass. They won the national championship. Football was really good, and like the 1AA championship. People didn't know him as much because you're not out there front and center. So people will see you and know who you are. So just behave and don't, you know, cause a scene when you're uptown at the bars.
Ultimately, having said that, you and I have had some discussions about some of the parties that are probably going to happen on campuses over the course of the next few days with the amount of money that's going straight to students now.
Which is great. I think if you come home and you don't have any money left in your bank account, but you had a great time at college, I'm signing off on that now. For actual things and not in jest, ultimately, I think that this is going to help colleges. It was kind of like a toe drag here for a while with NCAA, but with the money flowing in and above board, may I add, now would, say, a LaMelo Ball or RJ Hampton consider doing a year on campus while getting paid instead of going to play in Australia or New Zealand or wherever it may be? Maybe a player right now, like Jalen Duren, who plays for Team Final at Mountford Academy, that is weighing his options, places like Kentucky and Miami, also the G League or playing the NBL, he may think he can build his brand larger in Lexington than he could training in Walnut Creek, California with the Ignite program. I think it's going to be a good thing, and I think the market will also adjust a little bit. It's kind of like first day of economics class. There's supply and demand, and it'll meet in somewhere that intersection will work. For now, the offers are really high and really low, but the market's going to adjust. So I do think that my takeaway is that for the upper levels of college basketball, it'll never be like professional numbers, in my opinion, but there'll be enough money there that guys will think twice.
Yeah, especially if you're at like the two-way level. Like I was kind of trying to explain the Hunter Dickinson situation to our beat writer, Brandon Quinn. So you and I are both in agreement that we're not sure that Hunter Dickinson would have gotten a two-way, right?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, like we think he might have gotten one, but there was no certainty there. Like I had Hunter Dickinson at something like 90 to 100 on my big board. If he is going to get a two-way contract... Two-way contracts are something in the vicinity of, let's say, $400,000. It's a little bit more than that, and it changes every year, but like, let's say $400,000. I think that like only the highest of the highest level college basketball players are going to make at least $400,000 next year, right?
Yes, seems high, and once you package all stuff together, could be in that range.
Yeah, like if you told me Johnny Juzang like returns to UCLA, and by the way, we're recording before Johnny Juzang has made yes, a decision.
We waited as long as we could. We waited four hours for this. Eventually, we have to record.
Yeah, like we're kind of anticipating Johnny Juzang is going to make his announcement here while we're recording. It's 9:10 on the East Coast, and he has what like 2.5 hours to where he can record or to where he can make a statement on what he's doing. So. In the case of Johnny Juzang, if he returns to UCLA to an enormous market, to an enormous brand that people are excited about coming into next year, he's going to be the face of that brand. Johnny Juzang has a chance to make an insane amount of money, I think, by returning to college basketball. Not like, you know, eight-figure professional money, but a real amount of money that probably would exceed his two-way deal, I would think, right?
Yeah, and especially, and now it's over, but who knows, and UCLA will be very good with him and very good without him. That's not a shot or a testimony for him, but they're a good roster. They're going to get better. They're Adam Peyton Watson. Yeah. They're bringing back a lot of guys. Jaime Hawkins is going to be awesome. But that being said, I remember when Jalen Suggs hit that unbelievable shot to knock them out, unfortunately, the tournament. I don't know where people come up with these numbers, but, oh, Jalen Suggs would have made $300,000 this week for that shot. So if Johnny Juzang rides another wave of a Final Four or that type of run in March with more eyeballs, he may not hit that number during the season, but in March, he may start building up enough momentum where these deals are getting closer to what that number is that we talked about.
Yeah, like it's going to be hard for like marketing agents to guarantee college basketball players, all but like the most famous college basketball players, like high level numbers, I think. And by high level, I mean like, let's say $250,000 and above, right? From the jump here. But I do think that throughout the course of the season, there's going to be some real space for, you know, guys to go out and make a shit ton of money. As the smart movers here, the smart advertisers, hold back some of their funds and, you know, do deals during the season. I would think that that's the way to kind of go about it if I was running an advertising company.
Yeah, I'd wait. I'd wait and see kind of what those offers are. And we've seen some of them. We've heard some of them. And again, they're all over the spectrum. I also thought when the stuff was really cleared about sort of middle of the road type prospects, even like a little bit lower than a E.J. Liddell or Hunter Dickinson, and those guys will be on pro radars, and they both said in their interviews afterwards that the NIL was part of it. Let's just also be kind of clear here. They weren't great at the combine. They were fine. They're not turning down guaranteed first-round money right now. So
yeah, like, go back we should just be real about this. Like, Hunter Dickinson and E.J. Liddell were probably two of the worst five players at the G League.
You can be the one that drops the hammer.
I'm cool to do that, right? Like, they did not play well at the G League Elite Camp. And even without NIL, they should have been returning to school. And I think that at the end of the day, they probably would have made that choice.
And they did. But for them, I mean, they're going to be faces of the Big Ten, like you said, front and center. But I thought of a guy like Davion Mintz we talked about for Kentucky when he declared. Because we know what two-way money is. The overseas market, and please correct me here because you're much more dialed in than I am.
Sure.
It's not what it used to be. So the money is going down. So like, what would Davion Mintz have hypothetically received overseas if he had stayed?
Oh, God. Roughly. 50 to 60. Like, not a crazy amount.
He's going to get that with a snap of fingers at Kentucky. I don't think he's going to have 50 grand waiting on his door tomorrow from wherever, Subway or whatever it may be. But I'm confident enough that Kentucky puts it together and the rat. rabid fan base and the ratings they have and where they go and they'll have a bounce back season, he's going to be able to make more than that. So if you can do that and stay at Lexington and that 50, 60, 100 grand is still going to be there down the road, you don't have to rush it as much in your process to become a professional.
Well, there's that aspect of it. And the other part of it that's affecting the international market right now is that China has closed its borders to overseas players, at least to American players. I know that. So that's like 30 players that are all super high earners in China that make a ton of money that are kind of scrambling to find a spot to go. And a lot of them are going over to Europe and playing in EuroLeague and things like that. And that has a trickle-down effect on the quality of player that is getting paid like X amount of dollars, right?
Especially if you're a guard, I would say, too. Because in China and I guess different places, you're expected to score 30 points per game or they'll send you home and find somebody else who does. And now, like, those guys are always really good. And like you said, they're plugged back into now EuroLeague and taking spots from other guys where the cycle doesn't stop. People keep turning pro every single season. So the market gets harder and smaller.
Yeah, like, there are countries, just that, like, in conversations with agents that I have heard are doing okay in terms of, like, money. Like, I've been told that, like, France is, like, fine in terms of the amount of money that they're giving out to players overseas right now. Like, it's a pretty normal marketplace. Having said that, I don't think that every other market over there is, in part due to the fact that some markets over there are still struggling with COVID, right? Like, this is it's a complicated, you know, dynamic, fluid marketplace right now that agents, I think, are still trying to figure out how to navigate in a pretty real way. Like I'm not going to name names on players because, like, these are kind of private conversations I have with agents. But, like, there are a couple guys that, like, have been, like, EuroLeague players before that I'm pretty surprised for the numbers that, like, they're getting offered right now and probably, like, need to take at the end of the day just because that trickle-down effect from a lot of guys from China coming over to the United States. And frankly, like, a lot of guys, you know, wanting that high-level quality of competition, too, being willing to sign over there, it just has such a trickle-down effect to where it is really hindering the marketplace overseas. And, you know, to tie that to the NIL stuff, the NIL situation in college basketball, I think in most cases, for guys that are rookies over in Europe, it's going to be better for them to be here this year. Now, there is a case that, like, it's better to start your career over there because the way that the money works over there, like, if you establish yourself at a really high level, it kind of, like, spikes in plateaus, right? Like, you plateau at a level, you spike up to a second level, right? You plateau for a little while at a level, then you spike up to another level in terms of money that can be, like, you know, two times what you're making right now. So, look, like, I think there are reasons to stay and reasons to go for a lot of these guys, and we'll get into them when we start talking about it. But, like, you know, I think that college basketball has now presented a very real compelling case for a lot of these kids to return to school.
And it's great. It's amazing. It's been a week or two. College sports are still doing okay. Everyone's doing okay. Like, college football's not going away. Stadiums are still going to be packed. People aren't turning off the TV because all of a sudden kids and students are capitalizing on what they should have been able to capitalize for a long time. And we probably won't see the long-term effects of it for 4 or 5 years, and everyone's kind of being a little bit trigger happy with some of the offers. And to echo what you said, a lot of players, I just think, for not really knowing any better, and even us for not even really knowing any better what the market can set, just don't sign away everything that you can. I mean, there's a lot of people now and college athletes kind of advocating for themselves and posting on social media, like, I'll do anything. I'll promote this. I'll promote that. A lot of stuff has been, like, just product-based. So the money, it's not life-altering, but it's enough of a nudge, I would argue, that for guys that are on the fence, that aren't going to be first-round picks. I mean, we haven't really seen a guy that was a surefire first-round guy say the reason I went back right now is for NIL. But let's hope we can build, and maybe there is a day and age where that actually happens. For the upper tier, the elite guys, where they're not definitely going to be locked in the, say, lottery, but they're somewhere in that, like, 10 to 35 range and need to go back and develop a little bit.
Yeah, totally. In regard to the NIL issue, just in general before we get here. Like, it is just worth noting on our end, like, it took the NCAA drastically too long to get here. And on some level, I am hesitant to give them any sort of flowers, any sort of like positive feedback, but I'm glad it's here. I will just say that. Like, I'm glad that the NCAA has decided to go down this road and allow players to make what they are worth on the marketplace.
Yes, agreed. Totally. It's hard to watch Final Four games or college football games, see all these people and not think that there's a little extra there to sprinkle around. And it's not coming from that pot, but sponsors will actually look at players like the kind of commodities that they've been for their school. And it's a good thing. And it's all positive.
Okay. Let's take a quick commercial break and we will be back with some discussion of decisions. And by the way, Matt, we just got a decision right as we were talking here.
Oh, I haven't scrolled. What do we got?
Okay. And we're back.
That was cliffhanger. Even cliffhanger for me. You want a commercial? I haven't been on Twitter. What do you got?
Max Asemus is back. He is returning to Oral Roberts, it looks like.
Good for him. Good. I'm happy with that decision.
Yeah, I'm happy with that decision, too. Look, like, you and I have been pretty clear throughout this process that we felt that, unfortunately, there was some poor information out there, maybe, about where Max's draft stock could stand. Throughout the year, I have not talked to an NBA person who had him top 40. Just straight up, like, I will say that there was no circumstance where I talked to anyone who was like, this guy should go somewhere in the top 40 of the 2021 NBA draft. And if that's the case, like, I think there is like a real circumstance where, look, how much better is he going to do next year? Like, he was, did he lead the country in scoring? Like, I think he did.
He did, yes.
Leads the country in scoring, leads Oral Roberts to the goddamn Sweet 16. Like, on what level is he gonna do better than that during his junior year? I don't know, man. Like, he's just 5'11", and the problem for him was that he went to the combine, and even like the teams I talked to were like, the shot didn't even look good at the combine. Like, they were saying
that,
like,
that, and that was supposed to be his thing. The shot was supposed to be his thing. He's small, but he can shoot anywhere and he doesn't miss.
Right. And, you know, 40% three-point shooter. I think he hit, like, I forget what the number was. Like, I think he hit, like, 48% from shots, like, beyond 28 feet, too. Like, it was, like, an insane number. And Max is a gamer, and I really like Asemus. And we've been talking about him on the podcast the whole year as a guy that is interesting. But there's a difference between, like, guy that is interesting and guy that goes, you know, 35th on draft night and gets guarantees. Unfortunately, Max's draft stock was just never there, and there was never a point, I don't think, where I had him above like 55. And if you're not above 55, like, you probably should just go back given this environment.
Totally. And we can't kill him for not going, then kill him for going. Because, like, he declared for the draft, we said, should go back.
It was a complicated decision.
No, it is. And now we're kind of saying, like, well, why are you going back? He can get a little bit stronger. He can still make better reads off the pick and roll to actually look to pass and not to pull up every single time. And also, as we're here, I was catching up scrolling during commercial break, Kevin O'Banner, the peanut butter to his jelly and pick and roll will be withdrawing from the draft and staying in the transfer portal. So maybe this is going to look a little bit different for whoever's setting those high ball screens for him. But it was the right move. Right? Watching the combine stuff and seeing against the guys he'd switch on to, and even like Jason Preston made him look like really, really small. So he's got to shore up some stuff in this game, had an unbelievable run, and a guy that it really builds on what we were talking about previously. Hopefully he gets some NIL type of sponsorships, contracts, because he's going to be such a scorer and he won't be the face of college basketball, but we'll see a lot more, I would guess, on sports shows in the morning of Max Asemus had 35 again. He had 46. I don't know if there'll be a Max Asemus tracker, but he's going to be a guy that's talked about a lot, and hopefully sponsors catch on to that too.
Yeah, I hope so as well. I will say, in the case of Asemus, you hit the nail on the head in terms of where he has to improve. He just has to get stronger, and he has to make better ball screen decisions to pass. He's just not there yet in terms of that part of his game. He doesn't need to be just good at that. He needs to be basically elite at it to be able to stick in the NBA. the margin for error for someone who's under 6 foot tall, under 170 pounds, because his frame is just like not enormous. Like he'll probably get to like 170, 175, like, but that's going to be it for Max, unless he like hits a growth spurt or something like that. The margin for error for guys like that is basically zero. And right now he has some significant errors in his game. And by the way, like we haven't even talked about defense. He's really, really bad on defense.
Yeah, not awesome. Yeah.
He's an incredible college player. He's an incredible scorer. And I think that he would have gotten a two-way contract for sure. But there's just a difference in between those, like being able to like stick in the NBA and being like a two-way contract guy right now.
Hopefully took the feedback and the information and the proper feedback and information, despite whatever other smoke was out there, and following the tournament. Now the tournament's over, and you know, I was even looking at my own kind of personal big board today as highlighting guys that are coming off or coming back and adjusting. And you do look at it through a different lens after some time's passed, and maybe even the NBA guys who are higher on them than some of the combine said, yeah, this probably isn't worth a first-round pick, or this isn't worth something in the 40s for now. So I also kind of appreciate kids who kind of listen to the music and take it and don't try to fight it and just say, hey, I'm going pro. I'm going to prove you wrong. At his size, it's hard to take a gamble like that if everything else doesn't check out.
So you mentioned Jason Preston. I would say Jason Preston is the highest profile player so far to decide to stay in the draft. Now, we'll talk about what John Rothstein reported with Santi Aldama in a minute. I think Santi is a better prospect than Preston, but Preston is certainly the highest profile player to decide to stay in the draft right now. And it's an interesting choice because Jason Preston, I would say, is one of the more polarizing prospects in this draft among NBA evaluators that I've spoken with. Some really buy into the idea that he has a lot of upside still, and that like athletically he has more pop than what he's shown, and that once he like gets in their strength and conditioning programs and once he continues to just kind of work with them and develop the rest of his game, that he can be like a very high level point guard. Others don't really love the handle, think he's a bit of like an inaccurate passer, not necessarily a bad passer, but like doesn't always hit guys like direct in the shooting pocket, right? Mm-hmm. And then really worry about the pull-up game as well. I tend to be more on their side of the spectrum than on like the crazy upside side. But because he has such big fans, it does only take one team. I thought that his decision was one of the more difficult, arguably probably the most difficult in this draft class. There wasn't really a bad decision. There wasn't really like a great decision either. It's just a really interesting situation, I think, with Preston.
How wide do you think his draft range could be?
If you told me he went like 26 or you told me he went 50, I don't think I'd be surprised by either right now.
So you wouldn't be surprised first round or basically undrafted, which is wild. And I'm with you because I wasn't sold as others on his NBA combine performance. I liked the measurables. I liked the wingspan at plus four, netting out to about 6'9". And when he spread out his arms and switched on to Max Asemus, we just mentioned, it was, okay, this guy's got real size. I thought he padded his stats a little bit in transition when the game was decided. That being said, I was still most worried about the shot. He was at almost 40% from three, but it was only 82 attempts this year, and he was just a shade under 60% for the free throw line. And I had heard that the form of his jumper changed and kind of reverted while he was working out at the combine. So he's kind of like trying to figure out his own jumper right now. I just don't have the patience for that in the 20s. He's a big guard. He's going to draw interest because of that. I'm probably somewhat lower than the consensus, closer to where you are. The kid is a worker. It's an incredible story of averaging 2 points per game as a senior. He's going to figure out what he needs to do. I'm not totally that he's going to do it. It wouldn't surprise me if somehow he's ends up in a rotation or NBA team, or if you told me, yeah, he's spending some time in the G League next year.
Oh, I think he's definitely spending time in the G League next year. Like there's no question in my mind about that. Yeah, I think that you're right. Like, I really want Jason Preston to succeed. I think it would be amazing.
Absolutely.
Like, I can't emphasize that enough. Like, I really would love for that kid to find NBA success. It's an unbelievable story. It is an incredible story. You talk to anyone who's been around him, no one will say a negative thing. Everyone is just incredibly positive. Such a great kid, such a great story, an incredible worker, all of that. And those are the kids that I really like to bet on. I've got him at like 48 to 50 right now, like something in that range, I believe. Yeah. And I just struggle with these guys that don't have crazy bursts, don't have like incredible ball handling ability, and aren't great pull-up shooters. Incredible feel for the game, great vision, great size for the position. I'm really rooting. Like, this is one where like I genuinely want to be wrong about my evaluation. Like,
you're rooting against yourself by rooting for him. I like that.
Yeah. Like, I want to be incredibly wrong about the way this works. And because his game is at such an early stage of his high-level playing career, I think there's a real chance that, like, I am wrong. I think he has a very wide range of outcomes in terms of where his career goes from here, basically.
Despite the pizzazz and flair, too, that he has with passes, he does kind of have, like, a little bit of an old-school style point guard to him, too. Like, not bursty, but can back it down, throw a pass over your head, pull up if you go under the screen. Nothing but rave reviews for people at random. That includes people in his conference, his coaching staff. And sometimes you talk to guys kind of around the program, and a kid declares, and they're like, ah, no, we need him back with this. Everyone is rooting for him to whatever's the best for Jason Preston to fulfill your dream. And if that means the NBA and betting on yourself like he has in the past, more power to him.
Okay, a couple other higher profile guys that decided to return to school. Marcus Bagley at Arizona State. So the intel I got on Bagley was we didn't know how good he is, basically, from teams. Like,
it was 12 games. Like, I wouldn't either, and the workouts are all over the place. I'll let you have the floor, but yeah, I laugh because that's very accurate.
Yeah, like, NBA teams were just like, we don't know how good he is at this point, because he played 12 games at Arizona State and didn't really emerge as like a potential one-and-done player until his senior year of high school. Like, before that, he was considered like a multi-year guy at Arizona State that had great tools and a great frame, but was still developing his game in like a real way. He was more of a top 50 recruit as opposed to a guy that's like a tried and true one and done. So that senior season got shortened by COVID, and evaluators like didn't get a chance to see him, you know, potentially go to a Jordan Brand Classic and see his draft stock explode there like Jamias Ramsey's did, right? They didn't really get a chance to see him over the 2 years where his game has taken a leap, basically. I get it on their part, and I understand the decision for Marcus Bagley. Like, I think it's probably the right call if we're being real about it.
It was a roller coaster of a day because it started, and in my time, you're probably still asleep in Australia. He said he was going back to school, but he's staying in the transfer portal. So I had my little write-up because I didn't know what I was going to do, so I changed it. And then about an hour ago, he said, no, I'm actually going back to Arizona State. So, I've had to tweak what I wrote and kind of said and reported here. The reports was workouts. The combine were kind of lackluster at best, too. People were turned off that he didn't play the 5-on-5, and his pro day stuff wasn't great, which is rare for people. NBA teams do love the measurables. Almost 6'8" in shoes, 6'11" wingspan. The shot looks right, and at his size, there's intrigue. You shoot 38% from the field and 34% from three. It's like, well, it looks right, but it's not there. And he wasn't a one-and-done guy or thought of that, and started the year off hot with three or four games, and everyone got excited and said, maybe this is the next guy. And then he was injured and missed a month here and there, and then declares, and the wheels kind of fell off. So I thought he was a second-rounder, probably earlier, a second-rounder with a chance to get better. I wouldn't have been comfortable taking him right now in the first round. I like that he goes back to school. So he probably starts somewhere in the 20s again and can work his way up, or if he plays his way out of it, that could happen too. But I think the numbers will go up from 34%, take some better shots, and just hope he's healthy for a full season of college basketball.
Yeah, totally. I think that's dead on. I had Marcus Bagley, I think, at 43 going into today. Terrence Shannon, I had at 44. And
good segue.
TJ Shannon decides he's going to return to Texas Tech. So another player that was pretty polarizing for NBA front offices. You know, you mentioned to me, I mean, here, just say what you mentioned to me last night and from a NBA person.
What part of it? I had him on a personal board, I think as high as like 24 at one point, and then I think I ended up being around 34, but I know he had fans in the mid-20s, and then some had closer to the 50s. So another guy, all these guys we're talking about now, the range was so crazy. It wasn't 10 spots. Like, the range was like 30, which is, it's kind of insane, because the money that swings between a guaranteed pick at 20 to you're getting to the 50s and people start negotiating, well, if you take a minor kind of deal here and sign a guaranteed two for this. So it gets dicey in that second round. For him, too, I liked his ability to slash, his defend, and be switchable on the other end of the court. But with the jump shot, like the form of mechanics-wise, it still can be an adventure a little bit, especially his hands kind of go all over the place. He does this thing where he telegraphs his pull-up just slightly by slowing down and not quickly stopping and rising up. I didn't love his low assist numbers. I definitely get it. Like, I get the body at 6'6", and I think he tested at like 6.7% body fat. He is a twitchy athlete. He shot better to the end of the year. I thought my gut was who's staying in, because with Chris Beard, his head coach at Texas Tech, leaving to go to Texas, I thought maybe that was a tell that he was going to go pro. Now we get to look forward to him being the number one option on a Mac McClung-less Texas Tech team and slug it out in conference versus his former head coach now at Texas. So it's a great pro wrestling storyline going into the season.
Yeah, I am excited to see what he brings, because throughout his career at Texas Tech, you've heard like kind of rumors that sometimes in practice he'll like just kind of take over for minutes at a time and do some things that haven't really portrayed themselves on the court yet, in terms of like, oh, he can actually handle the ball, he can like slash and do so efficiently with kickouts and finishing at the basket efficiently and like create his own shot off the bounce. Hasn't been super consistent at that yet. You do see the flashes at times at Texas Tech, like in the Big 12, but I think that if he can solidify that average 16.5 points a game next year while playing the high level defense, I mean, he is a very high level wing defender who's very switchable and can do a lot of different stuff. I mean, I think that there's a lot there. I think that he could legitimately solidify himself as a first round pick in 2022 pretty easily.
We have about 30 guys in the 20s for next year, and that's okay. We don't need to be tied to our boards.
Yeah.
To add on your finishing stuff too, he was in the 87th percentile finishers around the basket this past season per synergy. NBA teams like that, because you're going to have a big 6'11", 7-foot strong guy rotating if you can power through that with his size and uses. He actually drives right better than his left, which is kind of crazy as a lefty. But ultimately, I did like him going back to school.
Okay. Next up is Santi Aldama. And interesting situation. We haven't actually heard from Santi yet, from what I know, right?
You know, I saw the tweet this morning from good old JR John Rothstein, but I haven't seen a Santi Aldama post. I haven't. I need a 30-second break here. Are we sick of the announcement videos yet? Going back to school, not going back to school, signing an NIL thing. It's like, dude, it's a minute 30 video. Can you just say what you're doing? Do I have to really scroll through this and see what's going on here as you walk around campus? Are you coming back? Are you not coming back? Sorry, I'm off the soapbox. I haven't seen that from Santi one way or another.
Is your brain so addled that you can't sit through 90 seconds of something?
Do you not have joy? I can't. I'm doing a million things right now. It's great. If it were a once-in-a-while thing, it would be fine. But everyone's got a video for everything. You can't just say a tweet like, going back. I think that would hold so much more weight if somebody said, going back to school. See y'all at the rack. You know, the Rutgers guys both announced today on long videos. I'm like, oh, God, are you going back or not?
Today, like, Mark Few should have just done, like, a tweet saying, like, gone fishing. Like, that's it. Going fishing.
Yeah, gone fishing, and then had, like, that, you know, the graphic of, like, the sunglasses going down, like, over his face, and just have him watching that Chet Holmgren play from U19 where he snatches the rebound in the air, drives coast to coast, and finishes a layup. And then he, like, casts his fishing rod out for the next game. Catch.
I will say that is legitimately the only play I've seen from the U19 stuff so far. And yes. Oh my God, Chet, that was ridiculous.
Yeah, somehow I woke up and we were caught in this like Twitter war of people saying Chet Holmgren is overrated, not overrated. I don't know how we got here. He's not overrated. I love Chet. But we're on Santi right now. I don't want to lose his moment either, because he's a guy who did dominate the Patriot League and to me seemed like a guy like, what the hell is he doing in the Patriot League? And that's not a knock. Yeah. Just you're 6'11". He was MVP of the 2019 FIBA U18 European Championship. He's averaging 21 and 10. And they played this like really funky schedule. They played Lafayette like six times this year. Just unheard
Pat of. League was a mess this year.
It was. And it, look, everyone did what they had to do to get through it. And understandable with the circumstances. For him, I get it. I am just a little bit worried about his strength. I think worst case, he's tailor-made to be a top priority overseas. Definitely a two-way guy. I think I had him like 48th on my board.
So, yeah, I had Santi at 45, actually. So all of my 43, 44, 45 guys all
all went out today. Yeah.
I love him. I'm going to be very interested to see what he does. So John Rothstein reported that per a source, Santi Aldama is going to play professional and not return. I think it's absolutely the right decision for Santi to play professional next year. He would have been, frankly, like he would have been wasting his time in the Pat League next year. Like, he is so much better. You watch Santi Aldama tape in the Pat League and you're just like, this is fucking Pau Gasol. Like, yeah,
it's a great comp. I mean, he starts on the perimeter, he'll like swing it, go in the post, bury somebody, step out, hit a three. It's like, how does he average 21 and 10? It's not like he put up 12 and 7. Like, he crushed it. And I almost thought some games he could average like 28 and 15, like that. Yeah. Good, that level of talent.
Yeah, no. Santi would have been wasting his time next year in the Pat League. And I'm going to be interested now to see, because he is from Spain, he has an incredible marketplace overseas, much in the same way that Filip Petrushev had an incredible marketplace in Serbia last year and ended up signing with Mega. I wonder if we see Santi Aldama do a similar thing, where he goes, he signs with a team in Spain or somewhere else in Europe, makes a real amount of money, because I think Santi would make a very large amount of money, especially if he was willing to sign for like 2 years. Like, he would clear a lot more money than your typical average rookie, easily into six figures, I would imagine, and like well past like the 100 mark. Like, you could tell me like double, triple that, and I would not be surprised by any stretch. In his case, I wonder if we see him pull out, much like Filip Petrushev did last year, and just do the 2022 draft while playing professionally in Spain this year.
Yeah, it's an interesting theory. I can wrap my head around it and see it. And it could be a case study down the line, depending on if he does go that route and where his draft position ends up. Because we just talk about international guys who don't produce like he did. We don't necessarily see him in college, and they get drafted late first, kind of like a draft and stash. If he dominates like Petrushev did and he goes 45th, you wonder if like he had never done that in the first place, does he go 32nd? So who knows, but we can check back in. That's one I'm interested in tracking to see what he does.
Yeah, and Petrushev helped himself this year, for what it's worth. Like, he won MVP of the Serbian League, and or the Adriatic League, I'm sorry, and was unbelievable. I think he's going to get drafted now. I do not think he would have been drafted in 2020. His game just wasn't there, unfortunately. I think he was, like, probably 95th on my board going into last year for similar reasons that Hunter Dickinson was low on my board, because the game just didn't really fit. But Petrushev went over to Serbia and really improved as a three-point shooter, became, like, a genuine spacing five. If Santi goes and, like, plays EuroLeague next year and works his way like into the starting lineup for a EuroLeague team, which I don't think is like totally out of the question. Like, I think he's that good as a prospect. Look, he could go in the first round pretty easy next year.
Yeah, I thought so too. I didn't know if you're sizing up for like he's late lottery or something, but what they've told me, another guy in the 20s. If you tell me in the 20s next year, I wouldn't be blown away.
Oh, I will have some. If Santi does do that, I'll have him somewhere in the 20s to start the year for sure. Our 40, I'll have him at 20.5.
Sure. Exactly. 20.7.
Yeah. Okay, let's take another quick commercial break and we'll be back. Okay. Final little group here. I will give you the floor on anyone else that you want to talk about.
Do we want to talk either one, back to school or going pro?
Yeah, sure.
I think we probably... Okay, we're running with this here. I want to talk about Jordan Hall.
Okay.
Because he had a lot of eyes tracking him when he declared he is kind of this late bloomer with good size, statistically had a great freshman year in the Atlantic and which included a triple-double. And it was sort of like a double whammy when he announced that he would be going back to school, but it wasn't St. Joe's, it was Texas A&M, and now he's back. He's actually going back to school, but it's to St. Joe's. I see him being a star in that league. I want to see more consistent high-level non-conference performances this year. Last season versus Tennessee, there was intrigue there. He tried out for that U19 USA team that he didn't make. He's made a lot of fans kind of behind the scenes. The underground draft buzz was building. I just hope that he can capitalize on that now and kind of put all the pieces together.
So in the case of Hall, Hall decided he had a G League Elite Camp invite, and that was per John Chepkevich. Shout out John Chepkevich, good friend of the program here. Decided to turn that down to go do the U19 camp. Didn't make the U19 team. That's a not great outcome, unfortunately, for Hall. And I think his buzz just never totally grew in the way that was necessary for him to stay in the draft, is maybe the way to put it.
Yes, that's very true. It was the start of the buzz. It just never really took off all the way.
Right. So he'll be the preseason player of the year in the A-10, right? Like, no. I mean, maybe one of the Bonnies guys. Osinee, maybe?
Yeah, could be. Kyle Lofton's back, right?
Yeah, Kyle Lofton. That's another good choice.
Yeah, but anyway, sure. He'll be there. Like, we're gonna talk about him. He's not going away. He may not start there, but he'll be preseason first team. And I don't know what their non-conference schedule is, but I'm sure he'll have opportunities to make his mark. And there is the size and the passing, and he rebounds well. And he did grow late, and he actually played on our circuit, then left to go play on another one his last year. So I liked him. It just he took off like a rocket ship. I thought he was an A-10 level player, and then when St. Joe's actually got him, I thought he was a high major kid. That's a great get for St. Joe's. When he's going to transfer, I thought maybe that's appropriate level. Now we can see him every day play against high major guys, but maybe this is a better situation for him to more showcase his talent and have a longer leash to do so.
Okay, another guy worth discussing, Julian Champagny. I would imagine Julian Champagny will be the preseason player of the year in the Big East, right?
Sure. I mean, probably the returning leading scorer or close to there. Someone will yell at us if we're wrong, but that should be the way it goes.
I mean, like, there's a world where, like, the voters in that league vote for Colin Gillespie because he's like a small white point guard, but like, I mean, it should be Julian Champagny.
You versus awards, yes, it should be. Should be.
I'm not versus awards. I love awards. I think we should reward people for being good.
Center awards, right?
I just want voters to be better at voting for the right people for awards.
That's fair.
In the case of Julian Champagny, another guy that I think made the right call. I had him like right around 60 on my board. Good shooter. I think he could stand to iron out the jump shot a little bit more. He really needs to be like a 40% three-point shooter, I think, because he's just not a great athlete by NBA standards. He'll be great in the Big East and will continue to, you know, average. He'll probably average 18 and 9 next year in that league and, you know, block a shot per game, get a steal per game. I think he needs to be like a genuine like 40 to 42% three-point shooter, though.
Yeah, that's the missing piece, and of the twins, it was always that he was the better shooter of the two between him and Julian, but still needs to bump it up another level to solidify himself to firmly be in the draft discussions. He'll have a big target because he's going back to St. John's. He'll have some more expectations where you're not going to sneak by guys like you did in the past, and you're really going to be the main target on scouting reports every single game.
Yep. Who else? Do you want to go?
I want to talk EJ Onu.
Sure.
So he's staying, correct? I think he announced that on Monday. He's staying in the draft.
Yeah, I think that John Givony got that.
Yes. Okay. So my kind of take on him is similar to a lot of guys. I wasn't really sold on what he did in Chicago. I know that another sort of cult hero draft status prior to the combine because he was a star of the NAIA. and then he was going to be a transfer candidate. So people were kind of like looking at him a little bit more as we got into draft season. And I know like the hardcore draft heads were way ahead of this, way ahead of where I was.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, like the people who clued me on to him, I mean, look, like I have a friend that coaches in the NAIA, so like he was like, hey, you should check this kid out. I've heard, you know, maybe he goes high major next year.
You got like the blue chips, Neon Badeau, like Algiers. You had to go see him before anyone else did.
Well, it was...
EJ O'Neal is Neon Badeau either, just to be very clear.
Well, the two names I got all year from NAIA were EJ O'Neal and Kyle Mangus.
Good names.
You know, Kyle Mangus is at Indiana Wesleyan, and I believe is going pro as well. Not quite as interesting because he's more of like a 6'5" like white kid, like off ball mover who isn't super athletic and can kind of shoots a little bit, but isn't quite elite enough at being a shooter given what the rest of his skill profile is. Onu has been the more interesting NBA prospect, and college coaches, really starting in like mid-March, were hitting me up like, hey, have you gotten eyes on this kid? Like, what do you think? How do you think he translates to the next, to the college level? What do you think of his NBA potential? Like all that stuff. So I got in on EJ Onu pretty quickly. It was more, I don't know that I ever got super excited, I would say.
I didn't either. I did think that he warmed up as time went on the combine, and we talked about this a little bit a couple podcasts before. He rotated, he blocked shots well with more regularity, but offense, he just looked really lost. He was a 40% three-point shooter last season, 27% the year before, and based on what he showed and sort of the mechanics, I tend to lean on him being closer to that 27, low 30s guy. Yeah. And at 6'11", with I think it was like a 7'7" or 7'8" wingspan,
maybe 7'8" and a half.
That's long. So maybe worth a look late in the second round if you believe he can. Another one of those guys. If you can put it all together, the mental game kind of catches up with sort of the physical game and profile that he does have.
So I get it, and I do think he's worth a two-way contract. I don't know if I draft him necessarily. Like, I don't think he's a priority two-way for me. But he's a two-way guy for me. Having said that, there are two things that really worry me. First, you mentioned the jump shot. That's like a weird side spin jumper.
Yes, very
that,
much.
Like, I'm with you. I think he's more like low 30s right now versus 40% from three. Second thing, like, really, there's three things. Second thing, I agree with you, does not process the game all that well offensively at rapid speeds yet in the way that he's going to have to as a big in the NBA.
Yes.
Third, his movement skills are not great. Like, this is a guy that like ran track, and the things that like you would hear are, you know, great athlete, like moves exceptionally well. I think he runs the floor really well. I think he can leap, especially off of 2 feet. Like, you get him the ball in the dunker spot, he can really move, but he's not really twitchy either. Like, he doesn't have great lateral quickness. He doesn't have like a first step to get downhill off of a screen, and then he's rolling, and then he's high pointing the ball and like leaping like crazy for it, right? Those are the things that I think he really needs to take a leap in. Like, he needs to figure out how much more twitch he has athletically, and then I think needs to like work on like processing the game and like making sure he doesn't turn the ball over at the next level, because that thing is going to move super fast in a way that he just hasn't seen yet. But I think that just given the physical tools, he is worth a two-way, because the rim protection did translate at the G League Elite camp.
His head won't be spinning as much either once he gets more reps. And it's not totally fair either, because he played 2 games and you want to produce right away, and he's trying to catch up, and he's overthinking. He's running too fast. He's getting blocked, and then he's blocking shots. His wingspan being 7'8" does bail him out of a lot of stuff too, because he can kind of be beat and throw his arms back and it's a block. Doesn't happen in the NBA. An investment type guy, late second round, maybe undrafted, but still ends up with the team.
Speaking of big who decided not to go through with this draft, Kofi Coburn.
Yes.
Fascinating choice. right in the range for me where Onu was. I think I would have taken Kofi over Onu, to be honest. I just buy the frame a little bit more. And I buy like the strength and his ability to like gain position and all that stuff. Like, he's just like super strong and enormous, even by NBA center standards. He is returning to school, though. It looks like he's going to transfer from Illinois. I mean, he is considering Illinois, but like he's in the transfer portal. Where are you on where Kofi stands heading into next season? Because that I was surprised that he didn't parlay second team All-American into trying for the NBA draft.
I was surprised, too. I was actually really surprised when Andrew Slater broke it and said that he was – it was like in the midnight hour. You had to announce by what the early – he like said he was in the draft and he's actually – no, I'm transferring. And then like another report came out through the day like, no, he's actually out and he's in the transfer portal. So I didn't know what was up and what was down. A little surprised because we had heard kind of rumblings of him having his eyes overseas even if the NBA thing didn't work out. If he wants to go back to college, I don't know, other than conditioning, I'd say, and he's not going to start shooting threes off pick and pop. I don't see that. I think it'll be of hard rim rolls off of ball screens and boxing guys out in the dunker spot and clearing out guys to drive. Maybe his feet a little bit defensively, but I don't think it makes this quantum leap from, I think I had him like 56 or 7. I don't think we're having this conversation in 6 months and all of a sudden he's 29th. I think he is what he is. It's not, I'm not hating on the guy at all. Like he's an unbelievable college player. I want him on my team. He's huge. Just his sheer size intimidates people on both ends of the floor. Just it's hard for those guys to play, especially and we're watching the NBA playoffs. Everything's getting so small. Even the best centers in the league that are that size don't play. So it would be hard for me to get fully on board with him in the first round for sure.
Yeah, I mean, look, like this is what the conversation we had with Udoka Azubuike, right? Udoka Azubuike did go in the first round. I had him at 44, I think, on my board before the draft, so I was not really a fan of the pick. I thought it was reasonable to give him a guaranteed deal just because he was so good on defense, but this is the difference between Kofi and Udoka. Like, Udoka was the most impactful defensive player in the country his year that he was at Kansas. Like, the drop coverage scheme that they ran and the shape that Udoka got in, like he was down probably to like 265. And I mean, like I saw him at Nike Basketball Academy and like he had a six pack, like he was in shape and like ready to go. And you could see it in his movement skills. Kofi still has to get there. He's just not anywhere near that yet. He also had a 1-to-10 assist to turnover ratio, which is one of the lowest numbers I have ever seen for a draft prospect. So
I won't make a comment on another person in the draft that was that low. Keep going.
Ooh, who else?
I won't. Keep going.
Okay. Now I'm going to be searching.
Yeah. Keep going.
JT Thor?
No, keep going. No, but it's ironic though too, because the Jazz drafted him and he's on the same roster as Rudy Gobert, and they're probably sitting next to each other during the playoffs. Just it's the way it is. It's the way it shakes out. People go small. You can't go big. They got two of them that can't work. I thought that maybe that would scare Kofi away from saying, I'm just going to go pro. I'm going to make my money wherever it may be. I'm going to have a great career. I'm going to make a lot of it and play a long time. I'm curious to see where he ends up to. That's another fun college basketball storyline that's emerging.
Jericho Sims?
No, keep going. Move on. Next topic.
Deuce McBride announced that he's leaving West Virginia. I feel like that's been done for a while now because he is a real shot of going in the first round. Josh Primo announced that he's leaving Alabama. That's been done for a while. I feel like he has a real shot to go in the first round. Aaron Wiggins has just had a strong pre-draft process, like an actually strong pre-draft process, and I feel like he probably isn't going to do much better than this unless he gets another step forward defensively and really improves as a passer and really improves as a shooter. Like, there's just kind of a lot to do for a guy that would be turning 23 next year.
Yeah, he probably started the year as a back-end first-round candidate, and I thought he was just okay until the calendar turned into 2021. He was much better. He bounced back some in the end of the year. He had 27 points, and he was 5-for-8 from three against Alabama in the tournament. And he looks the part. He's 6'6", his 6'10 wingspan. At that G League camp, the way he moved and extended over the top, he legit looked like an NBA player. And I personally thought some of those tools were neutralized after getting a call up to the actual combine.
Yeah.
When the game's fast, he looks awesome. He attacked from the wing in transition. I have him kind of in that late second round, later second round pick. And I wouldn't be surprised if he made it just because him and another guy that blew up in the G League camp, AJ Lawson, similar type games where people didn't write them off, but they weren't really like readily thought about as being draft guys, and they've capitalized on these processes, like you said, and now they're kind of smack dab in at least some conversations for picks in the 50s.
Yeah, like would you take David Duke or Aaron Wiggins?
See, that's such like a stylistic methodology for me that I always go Aaron Wiggins. I always go AJ Lawson. Like that's just the way I kind of prioritize my roster that I don't have, just my mental roster in my head. I'm stockpiling all the wings.
Yeah, like I have Aaron Wiggins right now around like 70 or so. Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to think of like guys that are in that range, like Aaron Wiggins or Isaiah Livers.
Oh, that's a tough one because they're saying shooting versus that. I'm going to contradict myself because I currently have Wiggins like 58th, and I only did 60, but Livers would kind of be like a few slots below. But I do like Livers too. Pass. Who else you got?
Joel Ayayi.
I have Ayayi a few spots ahead of that.
Okay, yeah. I have Ayayi at like 53 and Wiggins at like 70. I would take Ayayi, but you know they're in the same tier.
Yeah, Ayayi 45. I had Wiggins 60 before all this movement and five guys leaving while we're on the air. So I think naturally he somehow ends up at 55 right now.
Yep. Okay. Last guy here, I think, unless you want to talk about anyone else. Maybe there are two more. Delano Banton, did that one surprise you?
Yes, because I'd heard conflicting things throughout the year. I'd heard early he's only going to be here for a year, and then I'd heard a lot toward the end. No, he's definitely coming back. He's just going to go through the process, and then he declared he left. And I really wanted him to be a call-up guy from that G League camp. I understood when he wasn't because the first game he didn't really do much. And it was just this weird journey that we talk about. I do love his size. I love his feel, the way he manipulates, teases, toys with defenders out of pick and roll. Weak physically. He's a 23% career three-point shooter. The jumper is another thing that needs significant work on. I would take a chance on him in the G League if he's a guy that can maximize the size and the shots at least somewhat serviceable. And the way he plays and kind of sees the game a little bit faster than everyone else, the way he can orchestrate the offense when the ball's in his hands, like it could work.
Yeah, Delano's a guy that, you know, I typically don't like to say like someone made a good or a bad decision, right? As long as he's happy, like that's really what matters, right?
Yeah, of course. For all these guys, just to be very clear, like we're our boards we can throw out the window. We're rooting for people to be successful. We're not rooting for people to fail.
Right. In the case of Delano, I think there was real upside for him to go back, I will say. The reason for that is to play in the NBA, he needs to shoot, period. Right? Like, just has to shoot at some point. Has to learn to shoot. I'm not super bullish on him learning to shoot at any point here, but if he does learn to shoot, he is an NBA player. Like the passing, 6'9", no rangy, covers ground so quickly, like really interesting player. If he can shoot, like let's say he averages like 14-7-7 next year and shoots 37% from three and like looks like he can shoot.
Are you saying college or the G League?
College. If he does that at Nebraska next year.
Mm-hmm.
That guy's probably a first-round pick, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's not a first-round pick now. And maybe I'm just making excuses for him, but the first G League camp game, he was 0 for 5. I was texting with a couple of people, like, I thought he was really good. Like, maybe I'm just oversold on it the way he plays, and it's this really unorthodox game and style. But I'd be there with you that if he averaged those type of numbers and Nebraska had a good year with McGowan's coming in and they can make a splash together, that it wouldn't be out of the question for him to be a late first round guy.
Yeah, like there was real ceiling, I guess, is where I'm at. Like with a lot of guys, like it's hard to see the vision for how they move forward. Like in the case of Max Asmus, right? Like we're worried about what the ceiling is for Max Asmus because he's just small, right? With Delano Banton, like you can see the ceiling. Like he averaged over the course of his first, I think it was like before the COVID stoppage, I think it was 12 games or whatever. I think he was at like 12-6-6 or something like that. So 14-7-7 isn't exactly a big leap for what his skill set is. The shooting would need to take a leap, but like I think it's plausible. Like I thought that there was like a real opportunity there, and like worst case scenario, he probably is a two-way guy next year regardless. So really all you're losing out on is the difference between NIL money and the two-way deal, with the upside of making your start of your career just way easier, right? So I mean, maybe he gets a guaranteed deal and I'm just like off on this, but I would be surprised if that happened, right?
Would be surprised, yeah. Maybe he knows more than we do. Maybe his feedback was different than we have. And he will look good when there's group workouts and he can actually play and get up and down 5-on-5. He's never going to like look the part testing, especially athletically, but he's a gamer too. He's a hooper. You get him out there and you're playing and you're making reads kind of as you go and on the fly. He's a guy that I would want on my team.
Well, folks, we are at 10 o'clock Eastern time. Where are you right now? Where in the world is Matt Penny?
Great question. I'm in Brisbane. No, I'm in, I'm in not Atlanta. We advertise Atlanta. I'm in Cartersville, Georgia, which is about an hour outside of Atlanta.
Sure. Who's from Cartersville this year? What draft prospect?
Oh gosh. That's, I don't know, but you know what? One of the high schools that we rent from is where Trevor Lawrence played. That's a good tidbit. But who's actually from Cartersville?
I can't remember. There might be a prospect this year from Cartersville. So you're in the East Coast. Yeah. Johnny Juzang still has 2 hours, I guess. He still has not announced what he's doing. Yeah,
I guess so. Johnny, like, we got work tomorrow. We got 8 a.m. game sets starting. We can't, as much as the loyal handful of people that would stay on for us to just talk about nonsense and wait for the announcement, I don't think we're going to make it during this recording.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen either. The last couple guys here are, Marcus Carr, it seems like, is going to transfer somewhere else, which is probably the right move. Dawson Garcia is going to transfer, probably the right move. I guess like Musa Cisse?
Musa Cisse is going to transfer. Kansas is getting Jalen Wilson, and Oche Agbaji is big for them.
We didn't talk about Kansas. Oshai Agbaji and Jalen Wilson, getting those guys back was big. I kind of figured that they would get both of those guys back. I'm not a huge fan of either of them in terms of the draft right now. Both of them do very different things well. Like Jalen's going to have to shoot it, and then Oshai is going to like really need to be a high-level defender. Like not just like a solid one like he is now. He needs to be like a great defender. And then knock down the shots, because I don't trust him driving and making decisions regularly with the ball right now.
Both will have to be more assertive offensively. They're just Jalen Wilson was out of position playing the five this year at Kansas, then seemed kind of out of position playing the wing at the combine. He's going to settle in. I do believe in Jalen Wilson. I think he'd get there. I was higher on Oche Agbaji than you were. They're going to be a fun team to watch, and they're going to be on TV a million times this year, and just an opportunity for them to build on what they had and improve their draft stock in the process. So the right call for both of them, according to my, I guess, knowledge expertise.
Yeah, I think that's probably all we got, right?
That's it. I mean, there's been a lot of people kind of announcing, and I didn't even know they declared for the draft. I just see a tweet like, oh, they're going back to school. Didn't know they're in there. Armando Bacot announced coming back, and Jimmy's Seafood sponsored him. I thought that was cool. No idea what the sponsorship's for, but I like that. You tweeted before we started recording, Kendrick Davis going back to school. He's a good guy with 19 points, 8 assists, 4 rebounds a game, 35 against Cincinnati this year. Small at 5'11", but I'm a fan. Like his game.
Yeah, Kendrick Davis is awesome. I think he has like a chance to be an All-American next year.
Yeah, I'm trying to think who else. I mean, we talked about O'Banner. He's transferring. Devon Mitz, we talked about, back. Good names. There weren't any. I don't know if there was late here as we're waiting. Even Juzang has kind of settled more in that 40s range. There weren't any shocking top 20 guys going back to school, but still a good collection of names that will help the college game.
I think that's all the names we got. I mean, have you watched any movies recently, Penny?
Some TV, not movies. Dave is back on FX. You watch Dave with Lil Dicky?
I've seen the first few episodes and thought it was amazing and just didn't return for some reason.
First season was awesome. Season 2, we're about 3 episodes in. It's dark. It's darker humor. I'm hoping it turns. It's still funny, but a lot of darkness. Below Deck Croatia just started. I'm sure you've watched. And then, the Netflix, there was the This Is Pop show. Have you seen that? About music. So they had, I watched an episode on the birth of music festivals, and then I watched an episode on country music that became pop. So I have these little snippets of like 30-minute windows, and that's what I've been watching. So why don't you tell me the dozens of movies you watched in the last 6 days?
So I've watched 4 movies.
Okay, you're fixing water pumps and
yeah,
buying houses, so you had big boy stuff too.
So The first movie we watched was Censor, which is this, like, I think Irish movie, a British movie, maybe. Weird fucking movie.
Anything you start with, I haven't heard. I know it ends up there. Whether you admit to it or not, I know it's probably on the weirder side of things.
If you want to see, like, a weird fucked up horror movie, that one was pretty good, I thought. I thought it was, like, really well done, really well crafted, really interesting. Yeah. If you want to see, like, a weird fucked up horror movie, I would say that's the one.
Sign me up.
Beyond that, it's been Splat Week in this house. In this house, we honor Richard Splett, a.k.a. Sam Richardson.
Splett Week. Is that like Shark Week in America? It was Splett Week in Australia.
Well, did you ever watch Veep?
Of course I watched Veep.
Yeah, Richard Splett.
No, I get it. I just didn't know, man. I didn't know we had a week devoted to him, that's all.
Yeah, so Werewolves Within just came out. Like a horror comedy movie where he's the main character and is like this park ranger. Funny, super silly, really good. Really, really good movie. Really well cast. Enjoyable movie. I would go see that for sure. And then he's also in Tomorrow War with Chris Pratt.
Oh, okay. I almost watched that. I had it queued up, and then it was late night screaming from a 2-year-old that said, okay, we got 45 minutes. I don't like doing movies and breaking them in half.
Yeah, I don't either.
So I was like, I don't have the... That's on the list to watch once I... if I ever get home from this grassroots season. I do want to watch that. How is that? I've heard the reviews are kind of all over the place.
It's a movie that's kind of all over the place, to be honest. I will say, I think that Chris Pratt didn't work for me in the main role. But beyond that, I thought it was pretty... It was as good as what you would expect it to be.
All right. Chris Pratt is pretty close to can do no wrong in my eyes, so I'm... all right. There's low expectations, I guess, going into this. The general consensus of this, not general consensus of draft Twitter, is that it wasn't great. But I'm not going to not watch it.
No, I thought, like... Like on Letterboxd, I wrote like a bunch of words on it on Letterboxd, actually. I gave it like 3 stars. Like, I thought it was fine.
Okay.
Three, I didn't, playable. Yeah, I didn't hate it at all. And like another movie I would give 3 stars was Fear Street 1994.
Oh, I wanted to watch that. Yeah. My wife doesn't do horror, so another time. Maybe that's a Monday thing for me.
It's like, you know, what is it?
It's 3 parts, right? Isn't it like broken into threes, like 3 2-hour snippets or something?
So it's 3 movies that they were planning on releasing in theaters. I don't know how the fuck they were going to release these movies in theaters. Like, weird. That's a weird decision. I think it plays much better on Netflix than it does in the theater system. The first one's like 1 hour 40 minutes. The second one comes out this week. The third one comes out the week after. Really good. Yeah, not really good, but like solid. Definitely horror, like full stop horror movie. Teenager horror movie, like kind of in the vein of Scream. So far, this installment was at least.
That's good. Everything circles back to weird conversation I had. I'm sure we're running out of time here, but just quickly, somebody asked me this week, like, what was a movie that scarred you when you were younger? I said Scream because it felt really real. It didn't feel like contrived, like, oh, this could actually happen. So maybe Fear Street has a little bit of element of that, too.
Yeah, I think that this one is like a modern Scream. I don't think it's as good as Scream. Look, like, I've seen Scream more than I've probably seen all but like 5 movies in my life.
So Scream is 6th out of all the movies you've seen. Like, that was repeatable enough that Scream is right there in the top 10 most viewed.
Yeah, for sure. I love
Scream. So there was that Twitter thing last week, and I didn't want to do it, but it was like, quote tweet the 5 movies you've seen the most out of.
Oh yeah, yeah. I quote tweeted it and said Fast and Furious.
That's right.
Too Fast, Too Furious. But like, that's family. A joke. Family. Scream would be in there. Rush Hour would be in there. A Knight's Tale would be in there.
A Knight's Tale? Wow.
Learning with Heath Ledger.
All the layers. Oh yeah, of course.
I just watched that movie a shit ton when I was young. It would be all movies that I like watched on repeat when I was young. What other movies? That's a great question. Scream would be somewhere in the top 10 for sure. Ace Ventura. There was a point in college where, like, so the DVD for Ace Ventura, and we're like way fucking past it now in terms of basketball.
yeah, it's stopped. Well, yeah, this is an offline conversation. Yeah.
So like the Ace Ventura DVD, my buddy and I that I lived with, Jeff, we were like just hammered one night and we came back and we were like just like kept drinking and we were like, let's put on Ace Ventura. And we were like, okay. And we both fell asleep. So we come on in the morning and the DVD is one of those DVDs that just like plays after sitting on the main screen for like 10 minutes. Right.
Yeah.
And look, we were morons and just like kept the TV on like the whole time. There was probably a period in that apartment where Ace Ventura was playing for 36 consecutive hours in our apartment. We caught it in different intervals too.
I think your name is a script from TCU with Jeremy Piven, that guy who watched the same movie like forever.
That's funny.
PCU, geez.
Yeah, PCU. I thought you said PCU.
TCU. I'm like, geez, what are you talking about? Yeah, PET. I have a mouthful of spit. You can't hear me, so I get it. You know what though? With Ace Ventura, I was similar in that if we had too much fun on Saturday night, we woke up Sunday a little groggy. Roadhouse was that movie for us. I watched Roadhouse senior year probably 30 times.
Yeah, Roadhouse is a good one. I'm trying to think any like college movies that we saw a bunch of. I mean, The Hangover would probably be on that list. Like I saw The Hangover a lot in college. What other?
Yeah, that plays well. I've seen Tommy Boy probably about 100 times.
Oh, that's definitely one. Yeah.
Tommy Boy was like my sick day go to, my pick me up, my hat, every mood. It was hard to go wrong with Chris Farley, especially in that genre. And still 20, 30 years later, the lines still play. They still do, which is amazing because so much stuff is outdated and his comedy, his humor has reigned supreme through it all.
The other sneaky one that I've seen, there are two sneaky ones I've seen a lot of, are Eternal Sunshine and Mulholland Drive, because
those are, you watch once and I'm good, man. That's, if I think Dave's heavy, I watch Eternal Sunshine, so this is great, but I don't know if I can ever do this again. Like, well, this is so deep, man.
Well, like film major in college, right?
Yeah, or
like
right.
My second major, so like I wrote on those movies. Like I wrote like 15-page papers on those movies, so like had to watch them like back to back to back like multiple times to try and do it
with Ace Ventura in the middle, because Jim Carrey is the common thread. It's beautiful. It all ties back to him.
It's exactly right. Okay, Penny, the hardest working man in show business, according to Jimmy Patsos.
Yes.
Please tell the people where they can find your work.
On Twitter, Matt_Penny. You can also find my work at Lake Point Sporting Center tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., 12 courts. We got 400 college coaches. I'm going home next week and going right back out on the road. So I hope the audio quality was good enough for the listeners. I'm in a hotel room. I'm going to be in a hotel room a lot this month as we get toward the draft. But the train keeps rolling. We got to keep working here.
Go see Matt Penny on that random bench between the Loves and the gas station in Cartersville, Georgia. He'll be there the whole year, the whole week.
Not going far. I'm easy to find. My big head sticks out in the gym. So you need me, come say hello. Everyone's pretty nice. We're here for the jabs, the positive, the negative. We're here to get better, just like prospects in the draft.
And you know what? People come up and say hi to you. People come up and, like, you know, always
really nice,
like, hey,
really nice, really good. Hey man, we like your stuff. You and Sam have good chemistry. How long do you know each other? Never. We don't.
Like a year.
we're building. Yeah. We're building for an appearance in person in 2022. We'll leave that as a spoiler, a cliffhanger for another time.
2022. McDonald's All-American, probably. Do you do McDonald's? It'll probably be that one.
Could be McDonald's or Final Four, which is in New Orleans. I've heard a good time.
Oh God. I don't think that like the two of us are the people we have to worry about in New Orleans. I think it's like all of our friends.
The periphery. Yeah.
All of our friends who also happen to be college basketball coaches.
We'll leave it at that. Yeah.
We're never
naming names.
Never naming names. That is accurate. please go rate, review, subscribe to the podcast. We will be back later this week, or at least I will, to talk a little bit about the NBA. The NBA Finals happened. Did you even watch the NBA Finals yesterday?
I did. I was at a restaurant, but I did watch the NBA Finals. I did.
Yeah, it was fun. It was interesting, at least. I'm pretty clearly on the Suns in this series. At some point, Penny and I will also talk about some futures bets that I've made for the NCAA tournament in 2022. But until next time, we will talk soon. Bye.